is 2d6.
Excellent.
And you've got scissors.
Yep. Okay, cool.
There are two colors, by the way. Or at least two colors.
Okay. Great. Bunch of colors. Nice. Stretchy.
So excited
for this G6. Were you in my AW on the pack? No.
No.
Okay. A couple other people were. And it's going to be very similar, but. Maybe she'll bring a globe. Thank you. I am so excited to talk here. Is the mic working? Is that supposed to be on? Okay. It will just connect? Okay. Oh, okay. I just have to talk loud. I can do that. Okay. As Karen said, we're going to talk about some different kinds of geometry. So you guys are all used to a particular kind. We're going to look at some other kinds. So I want to start with talking about what is geometry. What does this word mean? Does anyone know? Oh, but I have hands up for papers. Just shout it out. Can you think of any other words that start with geo? Geology? Geography?
What are those?
Geologist? What do those words have in common? They're about the earth. Exactly. So the word geometry actually is about Earth. So this geo part means Earth. How about metry? Anyone know what that means? Yeah? Measuring it. Exactly. So the metry has to do with measuring, like the metric system. Okay, so the word geometry actually means measuring the earth, right? Some of the earliest geometry we know of happened with the ancient Egyptians. So they farmed along the Nile River, Every year the Nile would flood and then it would recede, and then they needed to figure out who got what land to farm. So they needed to be able to divide up the land in a way that was, if not equal, then at least sort of appropriate, right? They needed to know who had how much land. So they needed to invent ways of finding areas, basically, to measure the earth and appropriate it to various people. So we have some papyruses where they have these problems. What they would do is they would have a list of a bunch of math problems, and they would show you how to solve those particular problems. And then if you had another math problem, you'd look at it, you go look at this papyrus, like a book, you go through it, and you say, okay, where's a problem that looks like my problem? You find the one that looks most similar, and you do something most like whatever they did. Okay? So this was sort of where geometry was at that point. It was very practical. It was about how do we divide up the earth, and it was just coming up with methods for measuring areas mostly. My earrings are really noisy. I think I'm going to take them off here. Okay, so this changed with Euclid's Elements, which I don't know these facts off the top of my head, was published around 300 BCE. All right, and this is a really important book. It has the second most editions of any book ever. It was like the second book that was published on the printing press. It's a really, really big deal. The reason it's a big deal is that instead of just giving a bunch of problems and saying this is how you solve them, he took what we called an axiomatic approach to geometry, which means he was very, very careful. He said, I'm going to start by making a list of things that we just know are true, right? So things that are true in the world, things we think should be true. And I can't prove them, so I'll just leave those as statements. These are my assumptions. And then he built off of those. So he said, okay, if I know these things are true, what other things can I prove from there? So he wanted to justify everything. So when you're asked to show your work in class, he wanted you to show your work for everything, every single step. Why is that true? Why is that true? Why is that true? So it was a very big change in thinking about math. It wasn't just about getting the right answer. It was about how do you know your answer is right. So his approach was no longer about measuring the earth. Okay? His approach was about the compass and straight edge constructions, mostly, which a compass is a device. How many of you guys have used a compass? So not for finding directions, but for making a circle? So compass means two things, a little confusing. Straight edge is basically like a ruler without the markings. So with a compass and a straight edge, Euclid said, well, I know I can make straight lines with the straight edge, and I know I can make circles with the compass. And then he's asking, okay, if I just have those things, what else can I make? Right, so he set out to create some basic axioms or postulates. He used the word postulates. We now, and he had a different meaning for axiom. We now use axiom and postulate pretty much interchangeably. In fact, we usually use axiom where he would now use postulate. So I'm sticking with his word of postulate, but you'll often see people describe these as axioms instead. So let's look at what his axioms actually were, or his postulates. So his first one said, if you start with 2 points, anyone know what's going to happen? You can draw a line. Yeah. I have to stay over here by this thing so I can keep going. I'm used to coming out there. Okay, it's a unique line. So not only is there a line, but there's only one. Okay, if I start with 2 points, you start with the same 2 points, I draw a line, you draw a line, it's the same line. It's going to look exactly the same. What do we know about lines? Straight lines between 2 points. Anyone know? Yeah?
Lines are one-dimensional and have infinite length.
Oh, that's great. So lines, when we think about lines nowadays, they're one-dimensional, so Euclid didn't even think about dimension. And lines themselves have infinite length. So I only drew the line segment here that goes between the 2 points. But when we think about lines nowadays, you're exactly right. We think about the line itself actually continues on forever. And we'll get to that idea in the second axiom, what he thinks about for that. Another thing we know about lines is if I wanted to start at one of those points and get to the other one, the best way to do it would be to walk along that line, right? If I instead started over here at this point and then wandered, oh, that's a bad thing to be using. Let me switch to this. And wandered up here and then over and back down and around and there. Okay, that would take much, much longer, right? And it's not a line. So Euclid's definition of line, actually it was, but I agree. Our definition now and the definition we'll be using today, this isn't a line. It's only a line if it's straight. So any path that you take that isn't straight is going to take a little bit longer than the straight line. Even if you try to be really close to the straight line, if you go off of it, you're going to take a little bit longer than someone who stays on the straight line. So this is what straight lines are, the shortest path between two points. And that's going to be important when we start talking about what straight lines are in these other worlds. Okay, so his second postulate says if you start with a line segment, well, exactly what we said here, you can extend it. So Euclid didn't really have an idea of this infinity thing we have nowadays. He just thought stuff never stops. You can keep extending it no matter how far you want. And so both of these axioms are basically just saying, hey, I have a straight edge, right? I can line it up with some points and make a straight line. If I have a line, I can line it up with that line and continue my line. Okay, so that's all these are. I have a straight edge. The third axiom is about the compass. So if I start with a point and a radius, the radius is just some distance, I can make a circle. Okay, easy enough. So first two, I have a straight edge. Third one, I have a compass. The fourth one is a little more complicated to say. What it says is all right angles are congruent. Now, you guys nowadays, or all of us nowadays, if I ask you what's a right angle, you're probably going to tell me what? 90 degrees, exactly. Yeah, so we're used to thinking about angles in terms of their measure in degrees. Euclid didn't talk about degrees at all, okay? So his definition of being a right angle was, all right, I start with a line, and then I'm going to intersect it with another line, and I'm going to do it in a way where these two angles I made are congruent. So this guy has the same measure as that guy. Okay? So these two angles side by side make 180 degrees. All right? When that's the case, then we say these two angles are right angles. I just realized there's a typo in the handout I gave you. I'll get to that later. Okay. So the typo comes, I think there's a typo, the word complementary and supplementary. I'm usually good about remembering which is which, but I put the wrong thing in there. So complementary means they add up to 180, or to, sorry, no, 90, good, you guys know this, they add up to 90. 1p means smaller. 2p's is bigger. Supplementary means they add up to 180. So I think the handout says right angle means that it's congruent to its complement. It should say congruent to its supplement. I'll remind you of that later when we actually look at that handout. Okay, so what this axiom is saying is if I'm doing geometry over here, and you're doing geometry over there. We're looking at the same plane, but we're doing it in different places. My geometry looks the same as your geometry, okay? I can tell you, oh, I did this stuff, and you're like, if you do the same thing, yours will look the same. So every point in the plane really looks the same as every other point, is really what this axiom is telling us, that the space is homogeneous. Okay. So those are his first four postulates, and everyone was good with these. They're like, yeah, these make sense, especially if we're talking about constructions with the compass and straight edge. Because really, 1 and 2 are really what we mean by I have a straight edge, and 3 is really what we mean by I have a compass. And everyone was cool with the idea of, well, whatever our geometry does, what I'm doing over here should look like what you're doing over there. So everyone was like, yeah, these are great, no problem. But then we get to Euclid's infamous fifth postulate. Now, the way he worded it is a little bit complicated. He said, so if I start with 2 lines, and then I intersect them with a 3rd line, and I look at those 2 angles, so I take 2 angles on one side of that line. If they add up to less than 2 right angles, so nowadays we would say less than 180 degrees, any idea what's going to happen? They're going to meet on that side of the line, exactly. So then the lines intersect on that side. Okay, so if we're intersecting and they add up to less than 2 right angles, they can't be parallel, right? Because parallel, our definition of parallel means they never meet. So this one's a little hard to work with. There are some other ways of saying this where, okay, if Euclid's fifth postulate is true, then this other statement is true, and vice versa. If this other statement is true, then you can show that Euclid's fifth postulate is true. So these guys, you could take one of them as your postulate or the other one, and it doesn't matter. So this one's a little easier to say. And what it says is if you start with a point and a line, and your point is not on that line, then you're going to be able to make a line and only one line. So just like the first postulate where it was both there is a line and it's unique, same thing here. There's a line, it's unique, it goes through that point, and it's parallel to the first line. Okay. Now, people didn't like this postulate because it's so much more complicated than the other ones, right? I had to spend a lot of time explaining what this means, and it has nothing to do with compasses and straight edges. So people were really, really, really unhappy with it. They felt it ought to be a theorem. They were like, we should be able to prove it, right? It feels more like something, the others felt like something you were just saying, well, this is true. This one feels like something you're saying, you should be able to explain why it's true. So they spent a long, long, long time trying to prove that this was true. We're talking hundreds, thousands of years, not hundreds of thousands, but thousands of years, almost 2,000 years. Okay? And they came up with a lot of proofs, but they kept finding problems with those proofs. Sometimes their proofs were circular, so they proved it, but then they realized something they used in their proof actually assumed it was true already. So you can't do that, right? If you assume it's already true, then what are you proving? Can't do that. So they couldn't find a proof. And other people said, well, instead of using Euclid's postulate, let's find a different one that it feels more intuitive. For example, one of the ones that was used was rectangles exist. This one feels pretty intuitive, right? We can all draw a rectangle. All right, but if we're going to use a compass and straight, so when we're doing compass and straight edge constructions, it sure feels like you ought to be able to prove that, hey, I can construct a rectangle with a compass and straight edge. But it turns out if you want to do that, you have to use Euclid's fifth postulate. So this is a statement that is equivalent. If rectangles exist, then that fifth postulate is true. If that first postulate is true, then rectangles exist. But you can't prove either one independently of the other. Which is really weird, right? We've gone our whole lives assuming rectangles exist. So, like I said, 2,000 years. Next time you're stuck on a math problem and you feel like you've been spending forever on it, just think about these poor mathematicians who spent 2,000 years stuck on this problem. What they finally realized was, let's do something else. Let's just assume it's not true and see what happens. But to get to that point, some pretty crazy things had to happen. So I love these quotes. I have to tell them to you. So there's Farkas and Janos Bolyai are Hungarian mathematicians, father and son. Farkas spent a lot of time trying to prove this postulate. And then he found out his son was working on it. And he's like, dude, don't do that. Now, you think I'm paraphrasing here, but let me read you what he actually wrote. He says, you must not attempt this approach to parallels. I know this way to its very end. I have traversed this bottomless night, which extinguished all light and joy of my life. Seriously. I have traveled past all reefs of this infernal Dead Sea and have always come back with broken mast and torn sails. The ruin of my life, of my disposition and my fall date back to this time. I thoughtlessly risked my life and happiness. Seriously, this ruined my life. Don't go there. Okay, but what he was doing was trying to prove that this postulate was true. And Janosch is like, no, 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 I'm not doing that. I'm doing something else. I'm just giving up on it. I'm saying maybe this thing we've been trying to do for 2,000 years just isn't going to be doable. Maybe it's just not true. So he says, let's throw it out. Let's instead assume that this postulate isn't true, that it's not the case that when you have those two lines with the two right angles, that it'll necessarily, sorry, with the two smaller than right angles, that it will necessarily, and all that stuff. But remember, geometry means measuring the earth, right? Here's my earth. Nice, big, gigantic earth. The Greeks knew that the earth was round. They knew it was a sphere. They even knew about how big it was, which is pretty cool. They use similar triangles. So when you're doing similar triangle problems where, like, it tells you somebody's shadow is this long and somebody else's shadow is that long and you try to find someone's height from it, you're like, when would I ever use this? They actually use that to figure out how big the earth was. So that's pretty cool. This is not a flat plane, right? So we can ask, what does it mean to do geometry on this? We definitely have an idea of points, right? Those are locations. What does it mean to do a straight line, to draw a straight line on the sphere? Okay? And we will talk about it for sure. I just want to say that this is like the most obvious intuitive model to think about after the plane, right? Maybe even before the plane. We live on this thing, right? They were dividing up areas of lands right over here. But the problem is that first axiom, that between two points is a unique line, isn't true on here. So even if you don't care about that last axiom, the first one already says, I don't care about the geometry on this sphere, which makes me very unhappy. So I want to take some time to think about what geometry on the sphere looks like. So you should have a handout that looks at, starts with Euclid's, not that one, is there, and not that one, is there another one? That's it. Okay, that's okay. I have it here. Give me just a second. I have to take off the display or you see my messy Dropbox folder. Saying that this does satisfy the second postulate, but not the first one. What do circles look like on here? Any thoughts? Exactly. Well, is the equator a circle? Yeah, even the equator counts. So it's both a geodesic and a circle. That's really weird, right? We don't have that in the plane. Something can't be both a straight line and a circle. But it is here. The equator is both a straight line and a circle. Oh, yeah, so there's crazy stuff that happens here. So we can make a circle by using this thing as a compass. Okay, here's my center point, and here's my distance, and I just go around. And you can see that the latitude lines are exactly these circles. But if I go far enough, oh, my line is too short. Yeah, so I taped it here. This line here if this is my radius, what does my circle look like? It's just the one point. What if my radius is bigger than that? Yeah, does that count as a circle? Does that mean there's no circle, or is our circle an empty set? So we kind of run into trouble with this axiom too. So you can see why there are some problems with trying to translate Euclid's axioms to the sphere here. But I think it's our best model for thinking about geometry that's not on the plane, right? It's the one that's most intuitive to us. We can pick up a sphere and play with it and look around and think about understanding how the Earth works can help us understand this model. So even though we run into trouble with these, I think it's a really good model. So you guys have been really great. I can feel you getting a little antsy. Let's take a little break, and then we'll talk about the rest of these, and then we'll maybe talk about hyperbolic geometry. And I will get some water. Ah, more water. You guys are great. So we'll talk about these next.
But how do you make them?
So what you end up doing is you add stitches. So, like, do you know how to do that? I don't know how to crochet myself. There's information online. If you Google crochet hyperbolic plane, you'll find some.
And can you make them? Why can you only crochet them? Why can't you do it with why can't you
quarter turn? So these two points are, you can't really see, these two lines here, I meant them to be at a right angle. You can sort of see it looks like a right angle, but you can also see then when they intersect the equator, the points are a quarter turn around the Earth from each other, right? So 180 degrees should be a full turn around, 90 degrees should be a quarter, or sorry, 180 should be half a turn around the world, opposite points. 90 degrees should be a quarter turn. So there are a bunch of ways to think about what angle should be. Either way, we have an idea of what right angles are. Do you think that Euclid's fourth postulate is true here? Yeah. So Euclid's fourth postulate is just fine here. Right angles here and right angles here. So the angles that are congruent to their supplement, they're congruent to each other. So that one is totally fine here. There's some questions about the other ones, but that one's good. How about Euclid's fifth postulate? The one about parallel lines. Yeah. There are no parallel lines. Why not? Yeah, so any longitudes are going to cross, right? Longitudes will cross at the North and South Pole. And any two great circles are actually going to cross. That's maybe a little hard to say. Remember, the great circles divide the Earth into two equal pieces, right? So you could imagine, once you have this equator, you've divided the Earth into two congruent pieces. Now, any other line between two points, once you start extending it, you can't make a circle that divides the Earth into two equal pieces that only stays on this side, right? So any other straight line here, any other geodesic, is going to intersect this one. So no parallel lines at all. So Euclid's fifth postulate is definitely not true here. Okay, triangles, what do they look like? Well, they look weird. Triangles are just three straight lines, right? Straight lines between three points. You have a, yeah?
Well, we have a question about the fifth postulate.
Uh-huh. Isn't the latitude line parallel? Oh, great point. Latitude lines are parallel, right? So, yeah, they're circles, and in particular, they're not straight lines. Because, again, if you wanted to get between two points on the same latitude, you wouldn't actually stay on that latitude. You would go off of it. You should come up and look at that if you want.
None of them would do that.
Yeah.
None of them
Right. So none of the latitudes don't cross, but they're not straight lines in this. They're not geodesics, except for the equator. So the equator is the only latitude that is also a geodesic. I've just started using the word geodesic because we ran into some trouble with the idea of straight lines and shortest paths. Geodesic, I just mean this idea of a straight line, a shortest path. Okay. Triangles, right. So here's my North Pole. There's one point on the equator. If I go a quarter of the Earth around, it looks something like that. This isn't completely convincing. What's the angle up here if I've gone a quarter of a turn around the Earth? 90 degrees. What's the angle over here? 90. What's the angle over here? 90. So what's the sum of the measures of the angles in that triangle? 270. What's the problem with that? What's weird about that? Yeah, so in Euclidean geometry, you add up the measures of the angles, you always get 180 degrees. Right? So the fact that you get 270 here is really weird. In fact, if you take any triangle and you add up the measures of the angles, you don't always get 270. So again, this is weird. Unlike that, where you always got the same number, you get different numbers. Yeah. Well, that's a good point. So you can make triangles with any number of degrees, certainly less than 270, but more than 180, just by taking some particular angle here, and you look at where they intersect the equator. You know those two angles are both 90 degrees, so you have 180. So if you make this 1 degree, then you end up with 181 as your triangle sum. You make it 5 degrees, you end up with 185, and so forth. So you can make any measure you want now between, 180 and 360? How am I going to make 360? Yeah, if I go opposite sides here, you can have a triangle with an angle that's 180 degrees. It's weird, right? But awesome. So the sum of the measures of the angles in this case is always bigger than 180 and can vary. How about the Pythagorean theorem? What's the Pythagorean theorem? It's about right triangles. So if we have a right angle, I have sides of length A, B, and C. Yeah. Great. A squared plus B squared equals C squared. So this is about the relationships between the sides of of a right triangle. Okay? Is this going to be true on the sphere? No, why not? What kind of a triangle is the one we just did in the previous problem? They're all right angles, so it's a right triangle. It is. But it's got three right angles. You can't do that in Euclidean geometry. What would be our hypotenuse? You definitely can't get something like this, right? Because all three of these are the same length. Not going to happen. So the Pythagorean theorem, which has another great story. I love that theorem. But it's just not true on the sphere. And it's not true in some other models, too. Okay. I'm going to skip over this last one. I'm just going to say what it says because it's worth thinking about, but it takes a little work. Pi, right? Another awesome thing in geometry. What is pi? Okay, so as a number, it's a constant. No, this is good. Pi is equal to 3.14159 stuff. Probably some of you can say it a lot longer than I can. Okay, say a lot more digits than I can. How do we define pi? Do we define it as that number? How did people come up with this idea in the first place? Yeah. Yeah, so if I take a circle and I take the circumference, so the length of the circle itself, and divide by the diameter, I get pi. Any circle at all. I get the same number. Isn't that weird? I tell people that's weird and they don't believe me. They're like, no, it's fine. Any circle. I can do it with this tiny circle here. You can do it with a gigantic circle and we get the same number. That's totally weird. No? Not convinced? Maybe convinced? It's not true on the sphere. So we have to talk about, we said circles, latitudes are circles. So you need to talk about figuring out what the length is. The diameter, you have to look at the distance between the circle and the center point. So you need to measure this length. But you can actually do that here and find you get different numbers for your circumference divided by your diameter. So there is no pi on the sphere. There's no constant circumference divided by diameter. There's actually a really good way to think about this if we think some circles are just single points. What's the diameter of a single, or what's the circumference of a single point? Zero. So circumference divided by diameter, if you do it wrong, you get like zero. So, or you do it right, but with the sum of the circles, you get zero. Okay, so all kinds of awesome stuff that we're used to seeing happen in Euclidean geometry just doesn't happen anymore. Okay, so I want to move away from the sphere a little bit. I like to spend a lot of time on the sphere because we can get our hands on it, we can work with it. But like I said, it doesn't meet Euclid's axioms, even the first four. So I want to talk about a model that does, which is hyperbolic geometry. So you guys have the tools, you have the paper right now, and we will do this in a second, to make what's called a hyperbolic soccer ball. Now this looks weird because it's not actually a ball, right? Why do we call it a hyperbolic soccer ball? Any thoughts? Yeah. Yeah, it looks like a soccer ball, right? Soccer balls have pentagons surrounded by hexagons. This instead is a heptagon surrounded by hexagons. And when you do that, instead of wrapping back around, it spreads out. So you'll get to make one. It's a little imperfect, so you can think about which of the axioms that one satisfies. Not as many, or different ones. It does satisfy the first one, though. There is only one straight line between points. But I have some additional models here. What did I do with that? So you can make even better models if you know how to crochet. I don't, actually. I need to learn. I had some students who made some for me, though. So I'll pass these around to you. You can play with them. So the thing this has in common with the paper model is that it's all floppy, right? There's too much there. So the circle or the sphere kind of comes back around and closes up. This goes out extra more than the plane. So you can, if you Google hyperbolic crochet, you'll find instructions for making these. It's really simple. All you're doing is adding stitches as you go. So here are some pictures. This guy, let me switch to this, actually. I can do it quickly. That didn't look good. Okay, you can sort of see that. So let's look here. You can make straight lines on the hyperbolic plane as well. You just take two points and pull it tight. See that? So here's a straight line, here's a straight line, here's a straight line. But when you look at what they look like, oh, can you see that at all? No, it's terrible. Okay, when you look at what they look all curvy now. So straight lines, geodesics on this kind of look curvy to our eyes. And what do you notice about those angles? These are actually smaller angles than you would expect in Euclidean geometry. So in the sphere, where they added up to more than 180, hyperbolic geometry is the opposite. They add up to less. You don't have, I should have asked, do you have rectangles on the sphere?
No.
No? Do you have rectangles here?
No.
Right, so we don't have rectangles here. We can't have them. I'm wondering, can we have rectangles? I'll have to think about that. Okay, so we can't have rectangles. We can, however, so we said, let's remember, Euclid's parallel postulate said what? That, or one of the versions of it said, if you start with a line and a point that is not on that line, and I totally should never erase that part, we'll come back to it. Start with a line and a point that's not on that line. What does the Euclidean parallel postulate say? There is exactly one line that passes through this point and is parallel to your first line. Exactly one. So on the sphere, we said actually there isn't any. Hyperbolic geometry, it's not true for the opposite reason. There is a parallel line, but there are other parallel lines too. There are actually infinitely many lines that pass through this point and don't intersect this line. So I can't draw it on here, right, because this is a plane. So he said, but they're not straight lines. Well, no, because I can't draw, this is not hyperbolic geometry, so I can't draw it. But I'm drawing them curved like that because they looked curved to us here, right? I'll bring this around too so you can look at it. So here are two lines. They're actually going away from each other. So they're parallel because they don't ever intersect, but they start going away. Unlike in Euclidean geometry, parallel lines stay the same distance apart all the time. So since you can have lines that are parallel but sort of spread out, you can have lots of ones. So one that goes here, one that goes even further this way, one that goes that way. So you get lots and lots and lots of parallel lines through any given point. And you can see here that these lines start getting further and further apart. So that's what that's for. So you guys want to make some hyperbolic soccer balls? Some of you have already started. I have some more scissors. Who needs scissors? Raise your hand if you need scissors. We'll bring you some. You'll need tape. You'll probably need to share some of that. And you have instructions and the three things you need for it. Yes, absolutely. There you go. For you guys. Oh, yeah, sure. Sorry. What do your scissors look like? Do they all look different? Excellent.
Ours are bad scissors. So
oh. I have a bunch here. Need scissors?
Yes. Thank you.
Yep. Scissors. Anyone else? You two need scissors. Can you pass these down? Thank you. One for you. And two down there. Pass these down. Yep. One for you. Oh, we need one more down there? Do you need another pair? Yeah. Can you pass one more as well? Just pass them down. Thanks. Who needs scissors here? I see you need some. And you need some. And you need some. You need some. Yeah. Oh. Anyone else? Have I missed anyone? Yeah. Sure. Oh, these are okay. Does anyone else? You need scissors?
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. What did I do with the scissors? You can have these.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, you'll need the black ones too. Yeah. So you put those in the holes there. Yeah, exactly. Sort of forces it to spread out funny.
Why'd we get two of them if there's only one hole?
There's, so when you end up attaching the three ones with the dots here, and then you actually have, you end up with holes here to fill as well. Definitely.
Yeah.
I kind of want to pass them around. So, yeah.
Okay.
I guess you just add some.
This might be a lot easier.
You add like one every, well, however many you add. I think this is like one every third or something, so it grows really fast. Yeah. And this is like one every eight, so it grows slower. Yeah.
Do you have a pencil? Yeah. You want one?
You know, like all these, all the scarves these days are all like. Oh,
yeah.
So we have about one per row. For example, she has some, and so we're gonna have to
tape. Oh, I have some more tape.
Oh, more tape?
Yeah, actually, I have a bunch of tape.
Okay.
I forgot.
Oh. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Nice.
All right. I borrowed them from you, Teach.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
I took basically all the tape they had.
Where was this from?
You teach?
Gotcha.
Since I teach elementary ed classes, I'm allowed to check things out, so.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
You do?
Handy.
That's
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Want to see some crocheted hyperbolic queens? Play with it a little bit? Yes.
On my phone.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I have a 3D graphing program that made some saddle points.
Nice. So, what app is it?
It's called QuickGraph.
QuickGraph, okay. I might
so
have that.
Something else entirely.
Cool. Yeah. QuickGraph. I can remember
and
that.
Free, actually.
Excellent. I actually had some students who made them for me for a final project.
That's awesome.
So, yeah. And then I got to keep them. Perfect.
Nice.
Yeah.
I wonder how they...
By the way, nice to see you again. We're at the teacher's thing on Wednesday.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, hi.
These are cool.
Are you going to be presenting next month?
Not next month, but probably next semester sometime.
Oh,
yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
What is your area of research?
Geometry. Yeah. I don't quite do necessarily hyperbolic geometry.
Mm-hmm.
I actually do geometric group theory. So
oh.
Things like this actually show up a lot where I'm looking at, and look, it's a tiling.
It is.
Of hyperbolic geometry. It's a semi-regular tiling of hyperbolic geometry.
Just not planar. Oh.
Yes. So be glad the challenge problem didn't ask you to look at hyperbolic. Yeah, what was I going to say? I forget. Oh, these are really easy to make, actually.
You just
add a stitch every some number. Yeah. And if that's like one every eight or something, and I have another one that's really that's adding one every three or something, so it gets bigger really fast.
Very cool.
Mm-hmm. You can also do it instead of in a circle along sort of back and forth.
Yeah. So we're good. You want to show them?
Yeah. You like to see a piece of hyperbolic geometry?
Yeah.
All right. You guys want to see a piece of hyperbolic space? Play with? Hi. There's a bunch going around. I don't have any more. Make some friends and find some. Do you guys have tape? Oh, you have some. What's that? I don't have any more. Oh, you just want to eat? No, I made this. That was hard work.
Exactly. My fingers are already aching.
But it'll be so worth it.
No, it
won't. Is it a bad pair of scissors?
What?
Scissors are okay? Yeah.
Fine.
Because we have a few different kinds around, and some of them are better than others. You finished your cutting? Ah, you have a helper. That's one way to do it. Make some friends. Ah. That's no good. Do you guys have tape? Where is all the tape? I don't even know.
Wait, how do you cut this out?
Oh, so one of these is dotted, this one here. So you cut along that dotted line, and then you cut this.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
And then, yeah, so you actually cut these two apart, and then, yeah, you tape one of them in there, and then you attach these three along here, like this, so you'll actually tape one of them in there. Yeah.
Yeah. Is there any of that crochet stuff that we can look at?
Oh, yes, I will bring some up. Can I steal some of your tape? I'm just going to get a bunch and bring it back in a second. Oh, crap. That didn't work so well. Here's some tape. It'll help you a little while. You've got, of course, a little... Yeah. And crocheted stuff.
Is all the tape out, do you know?
All the tape I have is out. I don't, it seems like, I don't know, there's not enough up front here, but I don't know where it is. Where's the crocheted stuff? Are you done with the crochet thing? Can I take this back?
Yeah, sure.
Thanks. Can I put any more? Are you done with that?
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm totally confused.
Okay.
I know you created geometry. But when you say equidistant, it's a straight line and a circle. How do you actually reconcile that in a general theory of time?
Yeah, so, well, you've got to talk about what it means to be a straight line. One way is to look at it. What you really want to do is look at locally in a very small piece. Is it true that it's straight, right? And so, yeah, if you look at a little small piece of the sphere, you want to go straight, you end up a piece of a big, great circle. So that's why that's your geodesic there.
So it's kind of the difference between
Yeah. Right. You want to really look at what's happening infinitesimally. Let's see. I mean, you can also just decide you're going to define this is what straight lines are, and then if they meet your axioms, you're good to go. But so some people actually do geometry with a finite set of points, and they say, okay, these are on one straight line, these are on another straight line, and work from there. I don't know very much about that, but you can just like decide what you're going to call your straight lines as long as your axioms are true, you're good to go.
Middle schoolers are more confused than I am.
Yeah, it's
like all this basic stuff they know to take as facts.
Right. Oh yeah. The more you think, so I teach math for elementary teachers, and we do this exactly. We take all this stuff that they just take as like, of course that's how you do it, and then we go, but why? Spend a lot of time asking why. Yep. So I got asked for some crocheted stuff up here. Was that who asked? You. Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Tape. There is some around. Let me find you some. I'll be right back. Who wanted crocheted stuff? Any of you guys? I can take that. Crochet. This one's my favorite.
Oh, they say crocheted, but I got hair.
Tape. Oh, the green one. Yes, I did. Or this one?
Yeah.
Yeah. So instead of making a circle and going around, they started with a line, and then they went around the line. So it's
like the
spiral. Yeah, it ends up sort of, well, it ends up spiraling because it's got sort of too much, so it has to twist around to fit. But it's just like the round ones, that it's, you're just going along and you're adding a stitch every third stitch or something, and then it rows.
We have like paper towels because there's like some spilled coffee.
Oh, yeah. That's no good. Tape. I said I'd get someone tape. Yeah. Oh, excellent. Who asked me for tape?
Here's some.
Yep. Tape. Can you guys share with them a little bit?
Yeah.
Great.
She asked first.
Okay. Nice start there. You decide you're done after one? Okay. Yeah, like the coral reef. Yeah, there's a lot of very cool stuff.
Can you just go like this?
Yep. You guys have tape?
No.
Let me find you some. It would, yeah. They have one that they're sharing. Here, I'll take, make you a big piece here. Yeah. Oops. That is the risk with big pieces. And then you can cut off pieces with your scissors, for example, or you can tear it. Thank you.
How are you doing?
Good. How are you? How's student teaching?
Yeah, it's definitely
I just want to teach the math. but the administrative stuff.
Yeah.
Just like, oh, okay. And then just dealing with discipline and figuring out.
Yeah,
how to,
you especially have to do that. In,
yeah, with ninth
yeah,
grade.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But the kids are fun because it almost every class. Whenever I'm like teaching them something, they always like finish my sentences, or they think of what I'm going to say before I say it.
That's cool.
So I'm just like, okay, I can.
We Great can, work.
We're,
yeah.
We can do, keep turning this wheel.
Yeah. Cool. Anyone here want to see some hyperbolic crocheted hyperbolic space? Okay. There you go. Yeah. Should I get a piece of hyperbolic space too?
Yeah, that'd be great. Okay. Ready? 1, 2, 3.
Yeah. Yeah. Done? Great.
Yeah,
that's
what we talked about a
little bit. You done with this? Yeah. I think it. Thanks.
That's your name, right?
What? What is it?
Yeah.
Each panel was inflexible, but it's still a symbol. Or does it require the flexing of the individual panel?
It's requiring some flexibility.
Okay.
because, yeah, it would be hard to assemble otherwise. It, I mean, you need them to, like, curve a bit to fit it in. Yeah.
Do
you think I should pull people back together to talk about what to do with these when they're done, or just let people? Yeah, because then it sort of finishes it up. Yeah.
And I'll make a quick
announcement. Yeah. Okay. Okay, so we're almost out of time. Can I get your attention just to talk a little bit about what to do with these things when you're done with them? I mean, they're awesome, right? But what can we do with them? Mine seems to have disappeared. Did someone borrow it to see what they look like? Yeah? Okay. Can I get it back for a minute? Thank you. No problem. I just, as long as I get it back. So we can ask ourselves again, which of Euclid's postulates are true here? To do that, we're again going to need to look at what it means to draw a straight line here. So unlike the balls where it made sense to take a string and stick it, well, I guess we could do that here too. So let's see if we can do this. So the trick to doing straight lines on this, oh, can I have some tape? I have some tape I can use. Thank you. Just take some and hand it back. I don't need very much. Okay, so here's my plane all done. I'm going to do it on the side where it's all white. So we can start with our straight line here, and then it's hard because it doesn't lay flat, but you can any pair of polygons is going to lay flat. So you can hold them, you can put two of them flat on the surface and draw your straight line. It's probably easier to draw with a pencil, but I have this right now, so we'll use it. And you want to, so for example, now I need these two to lay flat to continue my line. Do you see how I did that? Moved it around so that the two that I need to cross over are flat on the table, and then pull it straight, and And now it's going over here, so I need this to lay flat. This would be faster if I had a pencil and a straight edge. And you keep going. And hopefully, you'll be able to see. It's a little hard, it's very hard to tell here, but it ends up looking kind of curved, just like the straight line on this crocheted piece looked curved. So you can ask if it satisfies the first and second postulates. It does. Circles look pretty similar. Third postulate is fine. Fourth postulate is a little bit weird here in this model because, well, we have different kinds of points. Oh, excellent. Straight edge. Awesome. Oh, in fact, we can measure. So let me draw a straight line here so we can see it a bit better. Sorry, if I were been a bit more prepared, I would have come with some straight lines already drawn here. But you can see them curving, maybe. They end up looking like they're curving. You can't see that at all. That's okay. Do it on your own. The other thing to look at is, so remember our definition of right angles? If I start with a line, right, so I'm going to start with this line right here. Here's my straight line. And then I'm going to draw in a line that's perpendicular to it. And my two congruent angles, do those both have 90 degrees? You can't tell very well from the picture. But we glued these together in a way that at these vertices we have more than 360 degrees. Which means that some of your right angles have more than 90 degrees if we use Euclid's definition of right angles. So this space is actually what we call not homogeneous. The points at the vertices here where things meet look different from other points. So this isn't a perfect model for Euclid's other axioms. You can make better models. The crocheting comes closer to being a good model. But you can't actually make a perfect model in our space. It ends up needing to curve too much. Okay, so Euclid's fifth postulate isn't true. Again, you should try drawing straight parallel lines or parallel lines on here. See that you can draw more than one through a point. And we already looked at triangles. So those, definitely, once you finish making it, try looking at what straight lines look like on here. So this has been great. Great work, everyone. I think there's some announcements. Yeah?
This has been great. Thank you all for coming. If you all stick with me for just two, three brief announcements. First one is that our next meeting will be on October 19th. We have Dr. Frank Sotil coming out from Texas A&M to talk to us. Should be a great meeting. So that's October 19th. It's another Saturday meeting. Second and third announcements are that it would really be great if we could keep being able to use this room. And so in order to do that, I ask that you just take a look around you and really try to clean up. I know there's a lot of paper around, but if you can just try to grab a few things if they're yours, if they're not yours, and toss them in the recycling on the way out, that would be fantastic. Thank you so much for coming out. Let's thank Dr. Bennett again. That was great.
We also need to get all those scissors and tape back, too, so make sure you get those back to us before you head out. Ah, great. I was going to ask. Thank you. I think it happens more like once a month. I'm not the organizer, so Karen would be a better person to ask in the green skirt. Yeah.
I have a question. Has anyone tried to prove Fermat's last theorem in non-Euclidean geometry?
Sure. I can take them. Thanks.
It's not possible on Euclidean geometry.
Right. I don't know what it would mean in non-Euclidean geometry. I'm used to thinking of that as a number theory thing rather than a geometry thing.
Is it like based off the Pythagorean theorem?
Right. That's true.
Like with any of that angle, like sit 90 degree, 3.
Right.
trying to identify every angle.
So the fact that even the Pythagorean theorem isn't true makes it seem like, yeah. I'm not sure what it would mean to take, like, x cubed, though, in hyperbolic space. So I don't know. Good question.
So you're talking about how non-Euclidean geometry is used in relativity. Is that what you're referring to as in gravity, curvature, space-time? So that
yeah,
when you're
exactly.
falling in free fall, it's actually falling along the geodesic.
Thank you.